Hello, gang. Welcome to the very latest edition of the official EFL podcast. With more Davids on the pod this week than you can shake a stick at. There's me, David Prutton, but more importantly, we begin with David Artell, the Grimsby Town gaffer, on the battle at the bottom of League Two for the Mariners.
There's not going to be 20 players coming in. There's not going to be a new manager coming in. It's us. So it's only our mindsets that need to change.
Sky Sports' David Stowell is here to navigate the intricacies of our beloved EFL pyramid, and the glorious Joby McEnough takes on the 72 in 72. Please press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss an episode, or you can watch the show on YouTube every week. If you are watching on YouTube, you may have noticed I'm back on the road again, and there are shades of Alan Partridge in a travel tavern, so let's lean into it. It's a big aha, and welcome to the official EFL podcast. Okay, another week, another EFL podcast. David Stowell, hello, how are you, my friend?
I'm very well, how are you? You're on your travels.
I am, yes. I referenced it on the introduction to this specific podcast. I'm a Corby trouser press away from being officially Alan Partridge, but nothing in here that I've managed to dismantle, apart from my reputation. That'll come in due course. Wonderfully, we've got another David on the pod this week. It's David Artell, the Grimsby Town manager, unbeaten in 5, won last night against MK Dons. You've turned a corner, according to your good self, David. How are you?
Yes. Hello, everyone. I believe we have. It's been a long time. In football terms, you don't get that long. So 3 months seems an eternity, but thankfully we continued our good run last night.
And vital points as you battle to pull away from the danger zone in League Two. What's the mood like in the camp? You mentioned just before we came and started recording, it's always good to come on these things after a win, so you must be pretty buoyant.
Yeah, I think I tend to judge the mood has how quickly it seems I get home. And with 3 more to lay shut last night and not getting until nearly 2 o'clock in the morning, it still felt quick. So even though I had the sights and sounds of Scunthorpe, Bradford and Ellesmere Port, you know, which most people don't associate with football managers, it still felt pretty quick. So yeah, the mood in the camp's good at the minute.
Has there been a specific shift in the last 5 games? Prutz mentioned your unbeaten run, couple of wins, 3 draws, because they've been very tight games, certainly looking at it on paper, and that came off the back of conceding 8 in the previous 2. So was there sort of something conscious there that you changed?
We changed shape after the Doncaster game, which really helped. But we also had a really open and honest conversation with the players after the Doncaster game. We had a really open and honest conversation the following day with all the staff. We was all in on the Sunday. And it wasn't ripping anyone to shreds or being, there's nothing other than being open and honest. How do you feel we are going? And the players had a voice. I said my bit, obviously. The staff said their voice the next day. And there was a feeling of, look, it's not, you know, this is mid-February or whatever it was. There's not going to be 20 players coming in. There's not going to be a new manager coming in. It's us. So it's only our mindsets that need to change. Because even though we'd lost games and lost games heavily, we played well in them. So for the Doncaster, we lose 5-1. Our expected goals were more than them. Now, you can't come out as a manager and say that because you just look foolish. And fans just go, what are you on about, you absolute fool? Or words to that effect. That's what I heard him say on the full-time whistle. but there's some underlying metrics that you actually, you know you're in the right direction. There's obviously some metrics that you're definitely not, you know. So as much as I can dress it up in one way, there's some things that need addressing. And when you have them sort of like open conversations and literally sit down with everyone, you know, I spoke to a guy called Jed Salzano, who was in the SBS. He's now on the Cobra Committee for the government.
Wow.
And he said that when, in times of crisis, talk more, which sounds just so simple.
Yeah.
He said, but don't go in your office and shut the door. Speak to more people. I spoke to the owners probably 3 times that week. I spoke to a data company. I spoke to our sort of like technical advisor who runs the Saudi Pro League. More that week than I've done in the previous probably 8 or 9 weeks. And when you realise that you're all in it together, mm-hmm. and you know, it's going to manifest in results and performances and all that stuff. The performances weren't as bad as the results dictated. We had expected points of 9 and we got 2. So this isn't me saying this. This is just objective data. This is not me trying to somehow psychologically change you. This is just pure facts, I suppose. So we knew we weren't far off, but we knew that we couldn't lose 5-1 and 6-1 every week like we had done in the previous two games. So that was a turning point, really, I have to say.
It's fascinating to hear that, David, because of your playing background and then going into management. I'm sure we've both come across former teammates or former players that suddenly that managerial move changes something in them, doesn't it? Where that openness, that honesty, that two-way conversation goes to the closed door, to the can I have a word, boss, to him leaving very quickly after training. You're thinking, well, who on earth am I talking to here?
Yeah. I always remember somebody saying, you know when you're in your office, is your door actually open? And it is.
Yeah.
And it sounds crazy, but there's no, you can't say to the players, come see me, the door's always open. If it's not, if it's literally shut.
They are simple beings as well, footballers. It's shut, I can't go in.
Yeah, they do think that. Some of them do think like that. But it's more the sort of the abstractness, the metaphorical sort of being of it shut. Mm. It's a barrier to being open and honest. And I'm probably too honest at times, if I'm being honest. You know, when I go to speak to the press, I say what it actually is. I don't spin a narrative.
But we love that. I mean, with my kind of journalistic hat on, so to speak, we understand how tough it is, don't we, Stowell? You understand, we get you out afterwards, tell us exactly what went wrong just a few minutes after the whistle's gone. You don't know what's gone on in the dressing room. You don't know what's been said at halftime. Going back to your days at Crewe, very forthright in what you wanted to say, but not in a way of throwing people under the bus, that open honesty, which, as you know, the match day going fan who's paying substantial money nowadays to watch football, I think they turn around and go, we know when it's not been good. We can see when it's not been good. And if the manager comes out and goes, well, we did this, we did that, they're sat there going, don't really agree with what you're saying. I'm sure they wholeheartedly appreciate what you're saying and your approach.
Yeah, I think it's incumbent on us to be honest. Because football fans, you know, there's a reporter last night who's just announced after 40 years, he's in his 70s, he's retiring at the end of the year. He's seen more Grimsby games than I have.
Grimsby legend, of course, yeah.
Yeah. You know, John Saunders is Grimsby legend. Why would I not listen to him? So every time I do an interview, I say, what do you think? Just for 2 minutes, and he tells me what he thinks. Not to try and butter him up or get on the onside of the media. I'm genuinely interested in what he thinks from his perspective, because he's seen more Grimsby games than anyone. So why would I not listen to that? You know, it's a two-way thing, but at the same time, you go, look, if you're going to ask me, keep asking me a really difficult question, I will then, because I've told you the answer. Because I am, like I say, I'm an honest guy. I'm not, which sometimes doesn't spin the right narrative, but then that's what I am. You know, so I think like this last 2 weeks, our fans, we took 700 to Wimbledon on last Tuesday night. We took 800 to Sutton on Saturday. We've got Gillingham on Saturday. We'll take another 800. They deserve honesty. You know, three London trips, or Kent trip and two London trips in 10 days. And travelling with nearly 1,000 fans in what essentially Division 4 is. They don't want me coming out and giving them waffle. They just don't. You know, I'm an honest Yorkshireman and a spade is spade. It's not a show.
Hey, we need more on the pod. Come on.
You know, I think you've got to do that. You know, I think you just get seen through, really. But that's what I am. That's where I am.
It's very easy, though, I suppose, isn't it, to fall into a trap in that sense, isn't it? Because being honest is great. And like Prutz says, from the journalistic side of things, we don't want to hear the same interview trotted out after games by various managers. But there's always that element that some people, if it's not their genuine self, can sort of relax too much, say too much, get into trouble, whether it's referees or whether it's digging out players or whatever.
I think there's a professional line that you're acutely aware of. You have to be. I've never once, I don't think in my 6 and a bit years or whatever it is, I've ever said this player was out of order or this player was wrong. You can't say that. You just can't say that. And on the flip side, like Prutz has just said, the fans know. So, for example, last night we had a critical moment to score a goal. Didn't happen. Didn't mention it after the game. Why? Everyone saw it. don't need me to, you know, if the lad who I'll speak to, you know, at the back end of this week, put my arm around him, who's been magnificent for us, you know, and tell him he did an unbelievable job in the role I asked him to do. He doesn't need me to. He just needs me to go on, keep going. Keep going. You'll be all right. As opposed to throw him under the bus after we've won, lost, or drawn. It just doesn't serve a purpose. It just doesn't, you know. So, yes, there's a, you know, going on to referees, we had an apology on Sunday because the linesman at Sutton gave an handball that just simply wasn't an handball. 2 minutes from time in a big, big game. You know, I go out after the game, you have to be professional. And I think the comment that sort of the media picked up on was, I said that the linesman must have genetics of an owl. So, you know, I'm absolutely raging inside, but you've got to, I'm trying to send a message to the players at that point whilst being professional, saying, we're absolutely devastated. We've only drawn a game. That's a long way from the previous, you know, 3 or 4 games earlier. So we've come on leaps and bounds and we've got to take that into Tuesday night, which we did brilliantly. But at the same time, I've got to tell the fans and the stakeholders sort of what I'm feeling without going, the referee was incompetent, bordering on all sorts of other stuff that I definitely can't say. Can't say that. So you've got to try and come up with a line that sort of diffuses the situation but shows how annoyed you are. And that's sometimes tough, especially when you've lost, especially when it's 20 minutes after a game, especially when, you know, you might get a bit of a, you know, a horrible journalist that keeps probing and asking you. But that's part of the job. Yeah. That is part of the job.
Not from Sky Sports, hopefully, David.
Of course not.
We're a lovely bunch. You mentioned driving home last night. I mean, just to clarify, we're doing this bright and breezy on a Wednesday morning, so thank you so much for getting up. I mean, you look extremely fresh, don't you? Well, kudos to you, my friend.
Maybe it's because of Spikes Sabres, if you think I'm
I haven't put my contacts in, mate, so that I'm just guessing. Stowley texted me to say he looks really well, so say it. You talk about the journey home, and we all do it after games where, you know what I mean, you pull on to the M1 and it says shut, or you go to whatever, and you're up here, there and everywhere. You're up talking to us. Your time at Crewe, you weren't just the manager, were you? You were as many roles as possible. I mean, the amount of hats you had to wear to make sure that football club kept motoring on. I think it's a fascinating insight to players that I've come across in my playing career that have gone into management, have had the courage to go into management, because not everybody's Jurgen Klopp, not everybody's Jose Mourinho, not everyone's Pep, but there are many, many jobs in and around the EFL, and there are vocational approaches like yourself into that career as a manager. And it's not all kind of knee slides and fist pumps in front of 50,000 people. Hopefully that journey takes you there, but at the outset, there's some serious hard work and hours put in, aren't there?
Yeah. When I joined Crewe, I think it was 28, I asked Dario if I could coach. And he went, you can watch. Okay. You know. And he wouldn't let me coach for literally 3 or 4 months. So, I was just on the touchline of under nines, under tens, a Tuesday and a Thursday night for 3 or 4 months. And he wouldn't let me anywhere near the coaching. And it was all about, have you got the appetite for it? And when you keep turning up, it goes, right, you can do half an hour. And you do half an hour from March till June, July, when they break up. And then you come back the next season in terms of academy season, and you can do 2 bits of the sessions out of the 4 bits. But you become time served. It's easy for certainly high-profile players to go straight from playing to coaching. It's a different skill. I look at my time at Crewe overall from 3 years as coaching, academy manager, 5 and a bit years as first team manager. And it was like the best apprenticeship in management I could have. Because I had, like you've just alluded to, because I'd been there for so long and I'd already come through with the academy, I'd already got about 6 jobs before I became first team manager. And I had no head of recruitment, no chief scout, no director of football. So you're doing all that. I can remember I took over on the 8th of January, that deadline day. We had Wickham away on the Saturday. The Tuesday night was the 31st deadline day. I got in my car, went to Exeter, watched Exeter Wickham. Got in at about 3 o'clock in the morning because obviously then five was shut. That's what happened.
obviously, because you were on the road. David Artell's on the road. Let's shut the M5.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I think I took 160 phone calls from 2 o'clock till 2 o'clock in the morning.
My word.
And I look back and I think that is absolute mental that I did that. Now, I did it from a place of I'm trying to do the best for the football club, prepare the team the best, go and watch the opposition. But absolutely mental. I think we put two players out on loan, brought two in. Didn't really watch the game when I got to Exeter. So it was just crazy. And you look, but at the same time, I go, how many other managers do that?
Yeah.
How many other managers get the opportunity to do that because they've got a chief scout that goes and watches games or whatever? Well, actually, I'm trying to do it all in as short a period of time to get as much experience as I can because this is new to me. Even though we've all been in the game for a long time in them different vocations, it is different. And you are now the leader, whether you like it or not, and with how that's seen. And so lots of stuff like that don't get seen.
No.
It just doesn't. And this is not me complaining. This is just the reality.
It's the job, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just the job. And you've got to make sure that you are prepared to do the hard yards, whether that's actually on the grass, whether that's getting in your car and driving 4.5 hours, 5 hours on a Tuesday night and getting back at ridiculous o'clock and literally spending, you know, 8 hours on the phone on deadline day. And that's, you know, I look back at my time at career and I couldn't have asked for a better apprenticeship in management without a shadow of a doubt.
Because when you left there, you said that you were sort of running out of oxygen was the phrase you used. And I suppose we're seeing with someone like Jurgen Klopp now saying that he's going to take time out. It's a vocation that is, a lot of people think it's privileged to work in football. And indeed we are all privileged in a sense to do it. But there's a lot of, as you say, hard graft that isn't seen, isn't appreciated maybe. And that, I suppose, would you, if you went back to you as a player in your sort of teens and early 20s, and sort of told that player what a manager goes through, would it change the way you were as a player, perhaps, or what you could sort of get involved in as a player?
Obviously, the more information you learn and understand as a player, the better you become, the more rounded you become, whether that's literally the rules of the game or coaching. You know, a lot of the players at Crewe, certainly a lot of the coaches, have been through the system. So they understand. So they're actually better coaches because of what they learn as a player. It can actually work the other way. So, you know, I've been into like Sale Sharks a few times. A lot of the players do the coaching. Now, that's a cultural thing in rugby because they were semi-professional until 25, 30 years ago. So there's still that sort of hangover from, you know, literally doctors being rugby players and wanting to learn and wanting to understand. Whereas that's not the case in football. But the more footballers understand their roles, their jobs and other people's jobs, the greater perspective they have, and they become better players.
It's a fascinating take on it because of that delivery of information, because that's what it is. A generation ago, it would have been, well, what are you asking all these questions for? Now it's the players are actively involved in moving forward and making themselves better, isn't it? And I get the feeling that between now and the end of the season, that delivery of information, that delivery of performance from your players, I mean, as you say, another big trip down at the weekend, Gillingham, should, from our outset, see you home and hosed. Is that the kind of positive way that you look at this running? Because we are in the running, aren't we?
Yeah, in order to keep that thread going about information and retention and everything like that, one of the things after the Doncaster game was the players felt the meetings were too long. I was giving them too much information, which I found astounding. I never even entered my head that they felt as though they were getting too much information. So we've stripped it right back and sort of gone the other way and given them as little as possible, but building from there. Now, that's my fault because I just assumed that they would be able to receive that amount of information because that's where we were at Crewe in the end. And I look back and think, did I do that at the start? Probably I did, but that's a different dynamic because a lot of the players were used to that. So actually, you know, the information is, or the lack of information, has actually helped the players. And then start building from there. Obviously, into the running, we can start building that up. You know, we've had some key threads for the last 2 months, and they're now starting to come to fruition. actually making it really simple for them is, well, it's proving beneficial.
Simplicity is genius, as the saying goes. David, I'm very, very conscious of the time you've given us, mate. It's been really wonderful to chat, super insightful. I mean, it's a part of the world that I've got a fondness for. My grandparents were in Lincolnshire many a Sunday afternoon at Cleethorpes. Was it Pleasure Island? Is that still a thing? I don't know. But it's like I said, a place I've got a lot of fondness for. But the job you're doing is wonderful. And joining us today, this morning, after driving all over that part of the world, we just wish you all the very best, man. Thank you so much.
No problem. Have a good time with Cheltenham. Pick a winner.
I'm trying to keep this as quiet as possible, but everyone keeps mentioning it, but no worries, mate.
Dusty carpet.
I always think, is that a joke one? Yeah. Well, I'll look into this.
Never been beat. There you go.
Ruts will ruin it.
The honest Yorkshireman to finish with a dad joke. Thank you so much, David. Okay. Thank you very much. You take care. David Stowell, you can pump the brakes for a little bit. You've got a little break now, because some fella called Joby McEnough is taking our 72 in 72 challenge.
Forest Green, Barrow, Stockport, Salford, Cardiff City, Swansea City, Bristol City, Bristol Rovers, Watford, Stevenage, Leighton Orient, Reading, Middlesbrough, Leeds, Southampton, Leicester, Plymouth, Ipswich Town, Sheffield Wednesday, not Sheffield United, they've gone up now, Coventry, Bolton, did Stockport already, going back again now, Barnsley, Rotherham, Wrexham, Notts County, Birmingham City. Mate, this is solid, mate. Where's Danny County been? Huddersfield Town. Did Pompey, didn't we? Did Saints. I'm gone, mate. I'm gone.
The super smooth Joby McEnough there, Stowley, a colleague of both of ours at Sky Sports. What a lovely fella he is. He's got a very healthy 27. So that puts him within the top 10. Matt Smith, top, Richie Wellens, Danny Cowley, Pete Wild, Wayne Rooney, Ebo Adams, Tom Bradshaw, Joby McEnough, and John Coleman just below him. Callum O'Dowder on 26 as well. We'll come on to Callum in due course, because my word, he's got a wonderfully timed goal and a wonderfully taken goal to break the hearts of Ipswich Town and make him somewhat of a hero momentarily for Leeds United. But we're going to start in League Two, off the back of chatting to David Artell. What an impressive human being he is. He's the kind of manager that you listen to and you think, oh, I wouldn't mind doing a job for him. But he sounds very, very honest. He knows exactly what he wants from his players. And slowly but surely, given results from during the course of the week, big win, of course, for Forest Green, putting Colchester United into the bottom two in League Two, albeit with games in hand. You get the feeling, given the way that David approaches the football matches, given the way that Grimsby have turned a corner, the Mariners could be pulling away to safety.
Yeah, they certainly look that way. I mean, the unbeaten run has been terrific. And as we mentioned in the conversation with him there, it's the fact that the games have really tightened up in the way that they've played. You know, there have been very few goals scored in those games. They've been very defensively sound. And obviously, as a centre-back who played under people like Keith Curl and Mark Wright and other defenders in his time, he's obviously always going to try and build from the back, but that had sort of got a little bit sloppy perhaps in the defensive play at times, albeit they had chances which they weren't taking. Now they've really tightened up, and it's seen them, they're 6 points now away from the drop zone, albeit Colchester, as you say, a couple of games in hand on some around them, three games in hand on Sutton beneath them, so Sutton really do have to pick things up. But the Forest Green Rovers, I mean, we've talked a few times about Steve Cottrell since he's got the job. He was employed January the 25th, and they hadn't won in 12 when he took the job, and they were 6 points from safety, and they're now, as you say, 1 point above the line. So he's come in and he's sort of shaken things up. He's got the squad pulling all in the right direction, and that battle at the bottom takes another proper twist. And if you were Colchester United now, you would, albeit you've got the games, but a lot of people would say it's the old classic, isn't it? You'd rather have the points at this point.
Absolutely. Points on the board. You get the feeling that would be something collectively that fans and players alike would want. An eye-catching result. Tranmere Rovers beating Mansfield 2-1. Wrexham 0-0 with Harrogate Town. You're busy between now and the weekend with a humdinger up in the northwest, aren't you?
Yes, what's it called? Well, it's a real local rivalry between Salford and Stockport, which will be a fascinating one to take in. And Stockport, of course, going for the title, going for promotion. Salford, we kind of expect every season to be up there, but obviously this season hasn't worked out the way they wanted to.
Do we expect that to, sorry to put in Stella, because of everything around it, because of investment around it, because of the key big names, that Manchester United connection, because we're talking about teams at the top: Mansfield Town, Wrexham second, Stockport third, Crewe, MK Dons, Barrow, AFC Wimbledon, Walsall. I could go on. There's so many teams above Salford. What is it? Is the perception not the reality with that particular football club?
I think it's very easy with the names involved to get carried away, but also in recent seasons, obviously they charged up through the divisions, and then the last couple of seasons they've been there or thereabouts in that playoff battle, but fallen away. Mm-hmm. It's easy sometimes to just sort of look at a team on paper, just the name of the team, and get overexcited about it, isn't it? And ultimately, League Two is a classic division where you've got to earn your stripes. If you're not good enough, you get found out, and they haven't been good enough this year compared to the teams around them. I mean, you look at a team like Barrow, who a lot of people who don't know League Two, who don't know the manager,
they just hear the word and think it's miles away, don't they?
Yeah, they just think, well, they'll get relegated because they know nothing about the team. Yeah. And that doesn't give the club the credit that they deserve for the way that they've handled themselves with players, the restructuring of the training and where they train and things like that. Whereas, you know, you can't just... You can't just be up there because of the people involved. And so it's interesting. But yeah, the teams at the top are starting to wobble a little bit, which gives Stockport the chance to jump up a couple of places with victory potentially. Mansfield lost two of the last three, having won five of the previous six. You know, teams either perhaps starting to get nervous, or injuries are biting a bit, or a bit of bad luck that they weren't having earlier on in the season. So it's really hotting up nicely.
Let's jump up a division. The bottom four in League One: Carlisle at the bottom, Port Vale, Fleetwood, Cheltenham, Cambridge United just outside of those relegation places. There's a 5-point cushion, but Cheltenham do have a game in hand on them. Gary Monk's gone in, he's seen a couple of games, not won as yet. Obviously, very, very early days after he'd come in off the back of them losing four on the bounce. Again, me making it out that a manager's job is a very straightforward one. Presume that Gary's got enough in his locker to make sure Cambridge are safe coming into the season?
Well, it's an interesting appointment, first of all, because he hadn't been working in management since November 2020. So he's had a fair while out of the game. He's obviously been using that time to look around, to look at jobs, to get back in, to keep his hand in the job. I think he sort of came out with the quote that he was fed up that the rug had been pulled from under him at previous clubs, and that he wants to have the opportunity to build something at Cambridge. Now, obviously, you get that if the results are right and if the board feels that you're going in the right direction. And time will tell on that, of course. As a club now, they've lost seven of their last nine games, which clearly with a new manager in is a slightly misleading statistic, because we don't know how different Gary Monk's Cambridge will be to Neil Harris's Cambridge or you know, previous Cambridge managers. But obviously that's a worrying trend. The only game they've won in that nine game spell is a victory against Carlisle United, and now obviously Carlisle right at the bottom of the table. So you would hope, if you were Cambridge United, that you were going to beat Carlisle United in the position that Carlisle are in. So it's a tricky one, really. Only four wins since December the 22nd, and all of those wins coming against relegation rivals, which is a good sign in the sense that you're beating teams around you, but obviously it means you're not beating anyone above that. So you're basically where you should be in the table, I guess. Their running is tricky. They've got Barnsley away, Blackpool away. They've got to play Derby at home, but they also play at Port Vale and at Reading next.
Yeah.
Two key matches, of course, down the bottom there. So we'll see how it all unfolds.
Let's work our way a little further up the lead. Lincoln City, 11 goals in two games. They've certainly hit on something. I mean, the eye-catching one out of the two, with the greatest respect to the two opponents, beating Barnsley in the way that they did, meaning that we've got Lincoln in ninth. Oxford, as we saw, well beaten. There's Buckingham side by Bolton, a real statement victory from them. Blackpool in seventh. Stevenage in sixth against Peterborough. As at the time of recording, they face each other tonight. A lot of Steve Evans' family are Peterborough fans, so he said he's going to get a double amount of pelters from the fans there. But he also said last night, as we were working on the Bolton game, that you wouldn't fancy meeting Stevenage in the playoffs because they'll win it, he said. That is classic Steve Evans talk. And I suppose, Stowley, if you've got 8 promotions under your belt, you can lay down that particular gauntlet, can't you?
Well, absolutely. Show us your medals, show us your promotions. I mean, it works, doesn't it? And fair play to him. I think at this stage of the season, we always see a team come from nowhere, don't we, and fly up the table. And that's Lincoln City in this particular division, unbeaten in 12, 7 wins, 5 draws in that run. And obviously, the result, you say the Barnsley result was very impressive. To win against Barnsley this season is impressive. To score 5 at Barnsley in victory is incredibly impressive. The victory last night at home against Cambridge, actually the big beneficiary of that, apart from Lincoln, was Burton, because they moved up without playing, because Cambridge obviously suffered in the goal difference stakes, which could prove key. But it's nice to see Michael Scubala doing well at Lincoln, because when he came in and did a little bit of work at Leeds United when they were struggling, quite a few people, I think, sat up and took notice, and some people thought, who is this guy? I've never heard of this guy. Well, he's been coaching for ages, and there's a lot of these people who perhaps aren't household names, but they've
career coaches, aren't they?
Yeah, they've put the hard yards in. They've learnt their trade, and now this is an opportunity for him to hit the ground running. And the unbeaten runs come off the back of 5 defeats in 7, so it was all going wrong, but now it's going so right, and they could quite easily pop up above that dotted line and into the playoffs.
Further up, Bolton won, Derby won, which meant that Derby took back second spot as those two mixed over the course of the evening. Portsmouth won as well. They've got possibly the trickiest running, but that 5-point gap at the top is the biggest gap at the summit of any of the 4 divisions in English football. It's feeling increasingly like it could be the season that they start to put right the wrongs over the course of many, many years, because I know for a fact Pompey fans, very frustrated about how long they've spent in League One.
Yeah, big club. I mean, there are a lot of big clubs in League One, aren't there? And certainly have been over the last few seasons. So it doesn't automatically give you the right to get promoted. But I think they have earned the right this season to do that, particularly because they've played very good football, but they've had so many injury problems. We've talked about this previously on the pod. They've had very promising teams, and then you've looked at the team sheet one week and thought, well, he's out, and then he's out, and then you know, various players have come in, even new signings, and got injured straight away, and it's so frustrating for them. So the fact that they are 5 points clear at the top with 8 games to go now for them, I just think they're gonna do it, which is probably not what Portsmouth fans want to hear, because they're starting to put the mockers on it now. But I mean, they're definitely going to do it,
says David Stahl.
But you look at the teams around them, and they have impressed, but they've also struggled. There's been a mixture. I think there was one point where I thought Bolton were going to win the title, and they could still do it, of course. But they're 6 points behind Portsmouth now with 8 games to go. But we've got a great run in, because a lot of the teams play each other. And you look at Saturday, Peterborough host Portsmouth, and it's Derby against Bolton. Oof. So let's revisit this in a week and see and see how the table is, and whether we're suddenly thinking, actually, hang on a minute. But yeah, it's a brilliant battle up there.
Wonderful battle. And there's another battle. Well, I was going to say at the bottom end of the Championship, but you can kind of just go all the way to the top now and say that everyone's got something to play for. Birmingham City lost last night, as of recording, to Middlesbrough, which leaves them on 39 points, a point above Huddersfield, who were in the bottom 3. Sheffield Wednesday on the same points as Huddersfield. Rotherham on 19. I mean, it's you look at the way Huddersfield Town season's gone, and I'm not saying for one second that they've sleptwalked into this particular position, but seemingly meandered towards it. Birmingham City, another one, managerial changes that haven't worked out. Once again, our warmest and best wishes towards Tony Mowbray. Hopefully, wherever you are, Tony, if you're listening, we hope you're on the mend. QPR, possibly the story of a team progressing in and around down that bottom end. Stoke City, Blackburn, Plymouth, Millwall, Swansea, more on them in just a second. Watford, they've changed the manager. I mean, you could clip that up and use that at any juncture across several seasons, because that's the model. We know that's exactly the way the Potter family runs. Watford, they weren't happy at all. Can you make any sense of it, please?
Yeah, No. It's the championship. This is what we love, isn't it? I mean, I put the table on my screen and I started scribbling in terms of where I think teams are safe and then where teams... Well, I mean, they're just loads of lines on the table, basically. I mean, clearly the top four, unless something monumental goes wrong, are going to be the top four. Don't ask me the order. Who knows? But that's your four. So then there's two playoff places left if you work on that theory. And I think you probably go down to Cardiff City as potential. So you've got West Brom, Norwich, Hull, Coventry, Middlesbrough, Preston, Cardiff as possible playoff contenders. Cardiff have got momentum. They're 5 points off. Preston, Middlesbrough, they kind of up and down. I don't know what to do with Preston. I mean, how you do the predictions every week, and I don't know. You just don't know what they're going to do, do you? Then you've got sort of three teams in the middle who are kind of just in the middle, I think, now. Sunderland, Bristol City and Watford. They're not going up, they're not going down for me anyway. And then you look at the teams below them, Swansea, Millwall, Plymouth, Argyle, Blackburn, Stoke, QPR, Birmingham, Huddersfield, Sheffield Wednesday and Rotherham, who are in the mix for three spots to go down. Now, sadly, I think Rotherham have got one of those because it's just not been
huge
a great season.
It's
three wins all season. They've got to double their points tally. They'd still be in the bottom three. So,
but words coming out of Rotherham, though, that Liam's going to be there to mount the attempted promotion push if and when they do get relegated, which I suppose from a forward planning point of view means everybody knows where they are. He knows what he might potentially need next season, if that's the remit and if that's the position they find themselves in.
Yeah, it makes sense. He knows the division. He knows what it takes to get out of the division as well. And also, I think when you give someone stability, then they can plan properly. And there'll be people who won't agree with that from a Rotherham point of view. But I think, you know, that the club is trying to be sensible with that. But I mean, it's above them. It's 5 points covering nine teams. And the ridiculous thing is, you know, Sheffield Wednesday, Danny Royal, done a great job. He's second bottom of the table because Huddersfield have done a good job, but they're third bottom of the table. Then you've got Birmingham, you've got QPR under Marti Cifuentes, who's done a great job just above the line. Stoke City, I watched them win at the weekend at Preston. Stephen Schumacher getting a win over his mate Ryan Lowe.
That had gritty written all over it from the outside looking in. Preston against Stoke.
I could have turned up at half time and not missed anything. It was one of those strange games, you know. And I don't mean that in any disrespect to the teams because they were fighting hard for the points.
I've played in many of those.
Nothing really happened in the first half, and then the second half came to life and Stoke City ended up with the points. But it's one of those, we're at that stage of the season where teams play a first half thinking, right, don't go behind, don't lose this yet. And then in the second half, they come out and try and win it. And so we'll see a lot of games like that, I think. But funny old division. And I mean, it's the great thing for us working in the way that we do is that it's going to be absorbing to the end.
That's really tickled me that you could turn up and just... Anything? No, nothing. Okay, good. Glad I got stuck in trouble. Elsewhere at the weekend, just gone. Certainly things happened between Hull City and Leicester. A helter-skelter draw between those two, I think, from what I've read and heard and seen and discussed. There's many people that turned up at the MKM Stadium. Biggest crowd there, I think, for 7 years, which is a good sign of what Liam Rossini is doing. 2-2 between those two. Ipswich Town on 95 minutes seemed to be going away from South Wales with all 3 points. Cue mass hysteria, carnage, and the Bluebirds keeping themselves right in the playoff shout. They've got a South Wales derby this weekend. Fair to say that's a big game, isn't it?
Yes, well, I am I'm a Cardiff boy. Born and bred, not a Cardiff fan before Swansea fans give me any stick, but
he's really scared of you.
But it's really interesting to hear from Errol Bullitt. I did the Cardiff game against Huddersfield recently when they won. Basically, it's pretty much the only real goal scoring chance in the game. Famara Jeju scored his first for the club, and Errol Bullitt has said since, you know, we're not talking about the playoffs. The word is banned at the training ground. We don't mention the P word. And they've got a fair bit of work to do to get in that mix, but they're in the conversation at least. And the game against Swansea is huge. Obviously, Swansea won the last four games between the two sides before Cardiff won the reverse fixture this season. So they would love to double Swansea because Swansea doubled Cardiff. So there's a lot in the game. But I mean, going into it off the back of that crazy turnaround against Ipswich, massive goal for Callum O'Dowda, not just for the collective, but for him. It's been a wretched season for him, sitting, watching while everyone else has been, at times, let's face it, at Cardiff City, struggling, but then picking up. and he could be a really, really important part of that resurgence, I think, towards the end of the season. So, yeah, fascinating. And you mentioned Hull-Leicester. Really interesting to see Jamie Vardy. He's now got 10 and 11 in all competitions, so he's coming right back to the fore of things.
Seems to be thoroughly enjoying himself as well. That draw meant that Norwich City could climb into the top six. You see Norwich City in sixth in the Championship and you think, yeah, that should be the case, but that's not really the story of their season. Are they now where they should have been for the majority? But then I presume the cliche being it's more about how you finish rather than how you start the season, isn't it?
Yeah, very true. I think also it's kudos to the club for having faith in a manager. We've talked about this previously with Mansfield Town with Nigel Clough, when he's very nearly got them up the last few seasons, but not quite. It would have been easy for Mansfield to say, right, you know what, this isn't quite getting us where we want to get, so see you later. But actually they've said, no, have a new contract and get us up. And look at them now, top of the table, and they might well do. So in Championship terms, maybe the patience that was had there has led to them blossoming through the course of the season and now sitting in sixth. And there are many people who would say the top six will stay as they are in some sort of order and that they'll be part of it. But we'll see.
Time will tell, because I think we are now officially in the home straight. When you get to single digits, it really does feel like collectively, but that's for 99% of the division, that we are now eyes firmly down on the finish line. David, thank you so much as ever.
Can I just say, Mr. Prutton, before
you can keep going,
a good luck to Tom Cleverley, who is in interim charge now at Watford. Someone I know very well from his youth days at Manchester United and done a lot of work with him. A great guy. And I think, we'll see how long that interim spell is.
Yes.
But good luck to him. And as you mentioned before, there's so much upheaval at Watford over recent seasons. So it'd be nice to see things calming down a little bit there and see him do a good job to start off with at least.
Well, good luck to you, Tom. Thank you so much, David. I mean, you are just the nicest guy, aren't you?
That's the facade.
I know, that sounded quite menacing, that laugh. Yeah. Let's get off quick before he says something horrible. Stowley, wonderful to see you, mate. Speak to you soon.
Cheers, Bratz.
So that's your special David-themed pod done. A huge thank you to David Artell, David Stowell, and of course, Joby McEnough. Get following us and find us in all the usual places, wherever you get your podcasts, or watch us all on YouTube. My name's David Prutton, and I'll see you same time next week for another episode of the official EFL podcast.